Michigan's Children proudly presents Speaking for Kids, the podcast where we explore crucial conversations impacting the lives of all Michigan children, youth, and families, especially the most vulnerable. Join us each month as we explore public policies and issues in the best interest of our kids and families. We'll bring you lawmakers and policymakers, advocates fighting for change, and the people most affected by those decisions. With our host, Matt Gillard, President and CEO of Michigan's Children, we'll invite you to become engaged too and show you how to take action on what matters most to you. Episodes are recorded live and shared virtually on YouTube and the audio hosting sites Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.
Hello, I'm Matt Gillard, the President and CEO of Michigan's Children, and welcome to another edition of Speaking for Kids, a podcast brought to you by Michigan's Children that talks about important issues that are affecting kids and families here in Michigan and in our country. And I'm very happy to have Mr. John Searles, the superintendent of the Midland County Educational Service Agency, as our guest today. And we're going to talk about an issue that's timely and I know is on a lot of people's minds, the importance of including child care centers and community-based providers in the expansion of our pre-K programs. This is something that's obviously gotten a lot of attention here recently as some various proposals have come out through the legislature in terms of next year's state budget that could have a dramatic impact potentially on the inclusion of community-based providers and child care centers in our expansion of pre-K. So Mr. Searles, thanks. First of all, thank you for joining us and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Matt. It's truly my pleasure to be here today. You know, I came up as, I've been a lifelong educator, but I've been a superintendent for about 19 or 20 years now, and in my current job for about 13, going on 14 years, and I would not call myself an early childhood expert by any means, but having had those, you know, years of experience as superintendent has taught me a lot about the importance of early childhood education and why I've become so passionate about it now, you know, a long time, let's just say, into my career as a superintendent. And, you know, Governor Whitmer has been instrumental in really pushing early childhood education and preschool for all over the last few years, and now especially. And so I think that when we look at what's it going to take for us to have free preschool for all four-year-olds in the state of Michigan, that's some serious expansion. Right. And in Midland County, for example, right now, and I have to say that we're in a consortium offering the Great Start Readiness Program with Midland County, Gratiot, and Isabella counties. And so we cover those three counties, and we have our early childhood experts that go out to the Great Start Readiness Program or GSRP classrooms in those three counties. So creating expansion and having space and high quality programming is paramount for all kids to get a good start in life, right? And so as we look toward expansion, making sure that we continue Michigan's really history of high quality, leading the nation in high quality preschool. That is very important to us as ISD leaders, and I think should be to all of us, whether we're parents or grandparents or employers, because people need high quality childcare in order to feel good about entering the workforce, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, and that's really at the heart of the challenge or the concern, right? Is what sure. What the potential impact on the childcare sector as a whole could be if this implementation. So, you know, what we're really talking about is how are we going to implement a universal pre-K program? And that's what it really right. at the crux of it. And I've got, you know, I've got a fair amount of history or experience on my side as well on the political side of this, about sure. the same amount of time. I think about 20 years, maybe even a little more now, I've been involved on the policy or political side of this, not directly on the education side, but there is some unique history and I think important for people to understand. Even going back to the last time that we expanded GSRP, this was under the Snyder administration, and yeah. before we were able to do that, we had to shift administration of the program over to the ISDs. And so we yes. really kind of created a new administrative, which really has worked well, right? And there was a lot of, I think, apprehension amongst ISD superintendents at the time. And sure. and there was a healthy debate about whether or not that made sense. But I think it's proven to have been successful in that regard in the administration of our what was currently our GSRP program, and then the expanded GSRP program that we were able to get under the Snyder administration. And now, obviously, we're talking about another further expansion to a full universal program. But talk a little bit about the administration of the how the ISDs view this, and at least in your case, I know you can't speak for all of them, but how you kind of view that role as the administrator of the GSRP program within your service area.
I think that ISDs play a critical role because we're uniquely positioned in our communities, right? We are everywhere in the state. We are present in all 83 counties across the state. That makes us uniquely positioned, I think, to be able to have oversight, to be able to flow dollars to our local partners, to be able to provide immediate support when GSRP centers might be struggling or have questions. Those questions might include what types of services are available for kids who may have special needs of one type or another, or who may develop those needs, or those needs emerge when they're under the guidance of teachers. What we've been able to see here in Midland County is that we are able to bring partners together to provide choice for parents. So whether they want to send a child to a Great Start Readiness program that's located in a K-12 elementary school or an early childhood center or their favorite church or whatever it is, those parents have that ability to choose. Community-based organizations, or CBOs as they're called, play a critical role in providing high-quality choice for parents today and will continue or need to continue that into the future. Now, you talked about history. In Midland County, 73% of the students, the children that are enrolled in GSRP classrooms right now are in community-based organizations. 73%. That's incredibly high, right? And that means that high-quality preschool is being delivered to those kids and their families within some kind of an organization of their choice. Also available at those places, typically, you have infant care, you have toddler care, you have three-year-old preschool, and you have, chances are there's also before and after school where kids are transported to their elementary. So there's this wide array of services that are being provided. If we are unable to, as we move forward in expansion, if we're unable to utilize those centers in the same way, for example, if the four-year-olds are all pulled out and sent to a four-year-old facility like their elementary school or some other facility, that means that those dollars that are going to support the four-year-old preschool and those dollars that also support infant and toddler care will no longer be available. Now think about that. In effect, while we're trying to get high-quality preschool, have all parents choose to be able to send their four-year-old to a high-quality, free preschool program in the state, if we suddenly have centers going out of business in the state because they no longer can afford the ratios that are required for preschool, for infant and toddler care, imagine what that's going to do to our workforce. Imagine what it's going to do to those centers who already struggle to make ends meet, to find enough quality workers. The list is long. And so in a sense, whether or not you believe that we should be having preschool, people need to understand that this is not only about preschool and having kids get a good start in life, it's also about economic development, right? It's about parents, moms and dads being able to enter the workforce and be able to feel confident that their kid is being appropriately watched, but also having the opportunity to have developmentally appropriate learning experiences. Those are tremendously important. And if we were to take that away, to cause centers to go out of business or to make care either for infants, toddlers, two-year-olds, three-year-olds to become too expensive, it essentially does the same thing. It pulls people out of the workforce or causes good businesses that are running now to go out of business. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we have huge challenges within our childcare industry. And the
Oh, it's
simple
not
fact is
necessarily easy.
yeah, no, I mean, and it's messed up. And I think people need to hear it. And I'm glad you said it as well, because we've been saying it is the only way the system works is with 4-year-olds in the system, right? You take the 4-year-olds out and the economy as a scale don't work. It just doesn't work. And so, you know, a lot of us as advocates have been really trying to push for a broader conversation about big public investments into our childcare system, of which pre-K is a component. But be that as it may, we're in a situation now where a lot of the focus, at least from our elected officials, is on strictly the pre-K and the public investment, state investment in particular right now into our pre-K program. And so now, those are the parameters, we're very concerned. And we appreciated your op-ed pointing out a lot of these concerns. But as advocates, that the implementation of this is done in a way that doesn't have more adverse impacts, like you stated, on the rest of the childcare field. And so the provision in particular that's got a lot of people up in arms is in the House proposal that has moved through to this point, which would eliminate the requirement. Right now, the requirement, the current, since our last expansion, has been that ISDs must contract 30%. You said you're at 73. I think you are an outlier. Right. You're probably the highest in the state at that. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but at least one of them. But the idea is to contract at least 30% of the slots out to community-based providers. We know a number of communities can't hit that. They don't have enough community-based providers interested or able to offer GSRP. So they are able to apply for a waiver to eliminate that requirement. But it at least creates that incentive or requirement to work with the community-based providers in their communities to support their broader interests in early childhood efforts that they're able to provide. And so that's the real concern from us as advocates, is eliminating that requirement. We could see, and at the fore, I mean, let's be honest, the politics of this are what they are. I understand this as well as anybody. I chaired the school aid budget my last term in the legislature. This is school aid fund dollars, right? And so I understand the public ed lobby, the traditional public ed lobby, that says these school aid dollars need to be going to school-based entities and school interest, school facilities, and not being directed towards CBOs who are offering pre-K. And that's that political dynamic has existed since long before I've been involved in Lansing for over 20 years, will exist for long after I exit this world in Lansing right now. And I mean, to some extent, this is the course that the governor has set us on when she's pushing for this universal pre-K expansion using school aid dollars. This is the inevitable political battle that's going to take place. And so, you know, it's enlightening for us as advocates to see folks like yourself step up and say, no, this has to be a component of it. But how do we get maybe more of your colleagues in the public ed world to kind of see the light and to understand kind of the broader good here?
Well, and understand that this is a complex issue. There are a lot of aspects to it, and I don't want to oversimplify it. Saying that we need to have community-based organizations is very easy to say, but you mentioned that not every community has an organization that's available, and the K-12 might be the perfect place for it to be situated. But when I came up as a K-12 superintendent, and I realized at the time that elementary students are a little bit cheaper than high school students to educate, and so many of us might have the mindset still, even though I know better now, right, that early childhood is just babysitting. It's not that at all. This is really about getting a good start in life. This is about being very systematic about play. This is about brain development, and that high quality materials and ratios that are appropriate student to adults are critical for that development. And we know that it's actually a higher cost model than elementary or high school to be able to properly age and developmentally appropriate educate kids. And so part of what I have to do is educate my colleagues that that's true, right?
Yeah.
And an additional complexity is the fact that there is not pay parity in preschool education with kindergarten teachers or kindergarten counterparts. There might be similar master's level or bachelor's level degrees that are required, but the pay can often be $20,000 or $30,000 different. I think that many of my colleagues are afraid of pay parity. And I am too, to be quite honest. But that doesn't mean that we haven't done hard things in the past. And it doesn't mean that we should shy away from valuing our teachers, like our preschool teachers, every bit as much as we value our kindergarten teachers. It means that we need to set that as a goal and make incremental progress toward that goal year after year. And we need to continue to look at what are those challenges that become more evident as we look toward expansion. I also say that having been a K-12 superintendent for 6 years before becoming an ISD superintendent, I recognize the fact that K-12 is not always the best place to situate preschool education, unless we have a mindset for delivering high quality services. This is not just kindergarten slowed down, right? This is different. And we want to make sure that the experiences that kids and parents have in that preschool, in that four-year-old GSRP program, are truly developmentally appropriate, that those activities and the conversations that are happening between the child and the teacher and between the child's caregivers at home are appropriate and connected in a way that is somewhat different than in traditional elementary school. And so all of those factors are very important when we're thinking about what it is can communities offer for their youngest students and cause them to have that segue into traditional K-12 education that makes that a smooth and proper transition. I also want to talk about, if it's okay with you, to talk about ACEs.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mentioned that in my article. So ACEs is an acronym that stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. Now, one of the things that I think is critical that we have as we're becoming more and more aware of the importance of mental health, that we start to talk about what those adverse childhood experiences are and how they have a tremendous or potentially tremendous effect on our health as older adults. So I would say that ACEs are probably the most unmentioned social determinant of health that there is right now. Many of you that are listening probably have never heard of ACEs, but I can say, and I probably won't get all the numbers exactly right, but just for illustration, if you have an ACEs score of, let's say, 5, and an ACEs score, you get a score of 1 for having a parent that's gone to prison or seeing someone murdered or maybe having drugs in the home, or those kinds of things cause you to have an ACEs score of 1, and everyone accumulates them if you have multiple of those. People that have an ACEs score of 4 or 5 are more than twice as likely to die of a heart attack in their 40s. They're more than double. They have a more than double chance of developing heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes later in life, in their 30s and 40s. And the life expectancy on average is about 20 years less for people that have an ACEs score of 5 or greater. Now think about that. Those are high cost healthcare concerns that happen to us later in life, in our 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. And those can be, in a sense, prevented or inoculated against in high quality preschool programs, where kids learn to be more resilient, to have a little more grit. All those words that have become in our society recently weaponized against us, and against us as people, as humans, as people who are social beings. We need to think about how our brains develop. We need to think about what those kinds of traumas do to us physically and psychologically. And we need to think about how can a high quality early childhood program like GSRP help us to be more resilient people, to be happier people, to be better contributors to society and better employees or employers down the road. All of those are really important factors.
You're absolutely right. No, and we've been involved in the ACEs work here in Michigan at Michigan's Children, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the key to this whole thing, one is identifying the ACEs, right, and the challenges that they present and the physical healthcare costs. And the numbers are astronomical when you look at it nationwide on what the cost of that is to us as a society, those increased physical healthcare issues that folks have. But so how do we get upstream, right? How do we, and so there's two things that you hit exactly right on the head. One is access to high quality early learning programs for the kids themselves, gives them a better defense mechanism to fight these ACEs off, to inoculate themselves, to react to them in a way that's not as detrimental to their long-term reading. What we're also seeing is with families having access to high quality early learning programs for their children, we're seeing fewer ACEs that the kids themselves experience because of the positive impact on the family structure and the family dynamic and the elimination of the stress in the family environment. We see less exposure to ACEs to begin with when we're able to connect families with high quality early learning and care programs in their communities as well. So it's a double win, the more that we can do this and recognize. And so that's why, I mean, you know, I hesitate because it feels like at times we're complaining about, you know, the governor's plan to increase investment into early learning programs, and we're not by any means, but we just also have to be smart about it. And we got to make sure that we're not doing it in a way that's going to have detrimental impacts on other high quality early learning programs or on the system as a whole. And so, you know, these are important conversations. They're complex problems, as you said, and we're grateful to have voices like yours out there that are in the midst of it on a daily basis. I'm hoping to shed some light for decision makers so that the right decisions are made as we move forward here, and we can invest our public resources in the way that makes the most sense for kids and families, especially.
Yes. These are, like you said, public resources. And as we develop as a society, we recognize that some things are more important than others. And we have recognized over the years that early childhood education and high quality preschool programs are very important. And so it is important to have these debates. It's important to have discussion and sometimes disagreement about how to best do it as we're planning for the future, because the decisions that we make today collectively will certainly impact the future of kids that aren't even born yet, right?
Absolutely. Well, thank you, John, for your attention to this issue, for the work you do on a daily basis on behalf of kids and families in Midland. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. This has been another edition of Speaking for Kids, a podcast brought to you by Michigan's Children. Look for more information on this important issue and other issues, specifically as it relates to the state budget process, here on our website at michiganschildren.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you again next month.
You've been listening to Speaking for Kids, the podcast for Michigan's Children with host Matt Gillard. Thanks for joining us. To explore these and other issues relevant to our state's children, youth, and families, and to build your advocacy muscle, go to our website at www.michiganschildren.org. You'll find links and news about past and future podcast topics under our Resource tab and action alerts under the Take Action tab. Find and like us on Facebook and Twitter. Terry Bannis and Stephen Wallace produced this podcast. Contact them with your questions and ideas for other topics. Michigan's Children is a nonprofit advocacy organization, an independent voice working to reduce disparities in child outcomes from cradle to career through policy change.